files.
Okay, all set.
Okay, here we go. Chapter 17 of Jeremiah, verse 1. The sin of Judah is written with a pen of iron and with the point of a diamond. It is graven upon the table of their heart and upon the horns of your altars. Whilst their children remember their altars and their groves by the green trees upon the high hills. O my mountain in the field, I will give thy substance and all thy treasures to the spoil and the high places for sin throughout all thy borders. And thou even thyself shalt discontinue from thine heritage that I gave thee. And I will cause thee to serve thine enemies in the land which thou knowest not, for ye have kindled a fire in mine anger, which shall burn forever. Thus saith Yahweh.
Excuse me one second. Didn't we read this last week?
No.
Not according to David's recording.
Okay. Disregard.
The enemies of the land which thou knowest not, for ye have kindled a fire in mine anger, which shall burn forever. Thus saith Yahweh, cursed be the man that trusteth in man, and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from Yahweh. For he shall be like the heath in the desert, and shall not see when good cometh, but shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness, in a salt land and not inhabited. Blessed is the man that trusteth in Yahweh, and whose hope that Yahweh is. For he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh, for her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit. The heart of deceit is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, Yahweh, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways, and according to the fruit of his doings. As the partridge sitteth on the eggs, and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches, not by right, shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be a fool. A glorious high throne from the beginning is the place of our sanctuary. How many verses is it? Okay, I guess we can stop there.
Yeah, that's good enough. I mean, there's 15 verses left. This chapter is saying that Judah it's written in stone now. Written with a pen of iron.
Yep.
It's written in stone that Judah is going to be taken into captivity. I mean, of course, Yahweh knew that from the beginning, right?
Right.
When that would happen.
Microphone muted.
But he gave the people time after time after time to repent. They wouldn't repent. So now they're going into captivity. We can't tell what year this is, really, in Jeremiah's ministry. It's kind of difficult because Jeremiah just doesn't mention the year of his ministry very often. The next time he does, I think, is in chapter 25. And that's the fourth year of Jehoiakim. And that was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. And that's Jeremiah chapter 25. And as we established when this commentary, when this study began, Jeremiah's ministry began about 627 BC. So from Jeremiah chapter 1 to Jeremiah chapter 25, that covers a period of 21 or 22 years. Because the first year of the book of Nebuchadnezzar starts in 605 BC, I believe. It might be 606, but I think it's 605. So that's 21, 22 year period right there. So where is this particular passage in that 22 years? It's difficult to tell, but it's clear that Jeremiah has already been prophesying for some time. And now it's written in stone that the people are going into captivity, which doesn't happen for another 20 years.
User entered your channel.
From Jeremiah chapter 25, because that's the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. Now in 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar went to Jerusalem, and we'll probably discuss this again when we get there, but that's all right. He went to Jerusalem and subdued the people, subdued the city, And he took 1,000 princes. I think it's 1,000 or 10,000. I think it's 1,000 of the princely men, the principal men of Jerusalem, and brought them into captivity. And Daniel and Ezekiel were both among that number in 605 BC. So Jerusalem itself wasn't completely destroyed until 586, 585 BC. So even from Jeremiah chapter 25, we have 20 years left until Jerusalem is destroyed. Here, this is anywhere between 627 and 605, but I would say it's probably getting towards that later part when Nebuchadnezzar becomes the king of Babylon. We can only guess. So where the sin of Judah is written in stone, and then it says in verse 7, blessed is the man that trusts in Yahweh and whose hope Yahweh is, for he shall be as a tree planted by the waters. He's not leaving that doesn't open the promises of God up to other nations and races. That's speaking about the children of Judah, that blessed will they be of the children of Judah that cling to him. That's all that means. The Judeo-Christians love to jump on verses like that and think it couldn't refer to anybody when it doesn't refer to anybody. It only speaks about Israelites whose hope is Yahweh and Israelites who trust in him.
Well, that's where reading it as just a user single verse rather than channel. A letter is a big deal.
Yeah, right. And they love to read things as single verses.
Yep, big time.
And totally misapply them. Crazy.
Hey, you can pretty well make it say anything you want if you just pick one verse out.
Yes, you can.
User entered your channel.
Okay, here we go. Verse 13. O Yahweh, the hope of Israel, all that forsake thee shall be ashamed, and when they depart from me shall be written in the earth. Because they have forsaken Yahweh, the fountain of living waters. Heal me, O Yahweh, and I shall be healed. Save me, and I shall be saved, for thou art my praise. Behold, they say unto me, where is the word of Yahweh? Let it come now. As for me, I have not hastened from being a pastor to follow thee, neither have I desired the woeful day. Thou knowest that which came out of my lips was right before thee. Be not a terror unto me, therefore art my hope in the day of evil. Let them be confounded, persecute me. But let not me be confounded. Let them be dismayed, but let not me be dismayed. Bring upon them the day of evil, and destroy them with double destruction. Thus saith Yahweh unto me, go and stand in the gate of the children of the people whereby the kings of Judah come in, and by the which they go out, and in the gates of Jerusalem, and say unto them, hear ye the word of Yahweh, ye kings of Judah, and all Judah, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, that enter in by these gates. Thus saith Yahweh, take heed to yourselves, and bear no burden on the Sabbath day, nor bring it in by the gates of Jerusalem. Neither carry forth a burden out of your houses on the Sabbath day, neither do ye any work, but hallow ye the Sabbath day as I commanded your fathers. But they obeyed not, neither inclined their ear, but made their necks stiff, that they might not hear nor receive instruction. And it shall come to pass, if ye diligently hearken unto me, saith Yahweh, I'll bring in no burden through the gates of the city on the Sabbath day, but hallow the Sabbath day to do no work therein. Then shall there enter into the gates of this city kings and princes sitting upon the thrones of David, riding in chariots and on horses, they and their princes and the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and this shall remain forever. They shall come from the cities of Judah and from the places about Jerusalem, and from the land of Benjamin, and from the plain, from the mountains, and from the south, bringing forth offerings and sacrifices, and meat offerings and incense, and bringing sacrifices of praise unto the house of Yahweh. But if you will not hearken unto Yahweh, to hallow the Sabbath day and not to bear a burden, even entering in at the gate of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. Then will I kindle a fire in the gates thereof, and it shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem, and it shall not be quenched. End of chapter 17.
You know, the Sabbath thing is really, to God, it's important because it just shows it's the first indication of whether or not men want to obey him. I mean, a lot of other sins are in secret, but the Sabbath day is a blatant disregard for God. Well, when you violate that, you're doing it publicly. When they violated the Sabbath in ancient Jerusalem, when they started trading and leaving the markets open and bringing in merchandise, which is what it means by bear burden here, by stocking your shelves and bringing in merchandise into the city and storing it so that when the markets open, you're working. Even if the markets close and you're bearing burdens, meaning bringing in merchandise, you're working. That's a blatant public disregard for God.
Yep. Well, where I grew up, the town was shut down on Sunday. The only things that were open were the churches and the tavern, and there was no beer or nothing served that day. It was for coffee and rolls that the parents or the dads would go up and sit and talk about the crops or whatever while the kids were in Sunday school.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay, where I grew up, by the time I became cognizant, And when I mean cognizant, I mean like 6, 7 years old, when you know what's going on around you. There were stores that were considered necessities that were open. And they were mostly just food stores. And there were some supermarkets like that were kind of like precursors to Walmart. I remember my mother used to go all the time to this place called Two Guys. And yeah, they were Jews, both of them. Well, they had about a dozen and a half stores in New Jersey at one time. And it was kind of like a Super Walmart before Super Walmart. I'm talking about 1965, 66. And they sold food on one side, and they sold everything else that a Walmart would sell, sporting goods, stationery, pet supplies, whatever, clothing on the other side. Appliances, televisions, everything in Walmart had today, they had. And the food aisles would be open, and then only a couple of sections in the rest of the store would be open, and everything else they'd have roped off and you couldn't go into it because of the blue laws. But the bars and all the shops that didn't sell necessities were closed, every one of them. But the bars didn't open until noon. The bars opened and you could buy beer and have drinks, but not until noon. But all the bars had a spread of food out on Sunday for free. I remember that when I was a kid, all the bars in the neighborhood. And there were a lot of bars in the neighborhood. Anglo-Irish neighborhood, not but bars, right? On every corner. Sometimes 3 and 4 bars on the corner. They'd have all 4 corners were bars. There were a few of those. And every bar would have a spread out of food and cold cuts and boiled eggs and stuff like that. And it was always free.
Oh, wow.
But you couldn't drink in a bar until noon. And I guess that's because they didn't want the bars to compete with the churches. But once the churches were closed, the bars were open.
Where I'm from, it changed in the late 80s. Everything was closed Sundays except for, like you said, food, gas, that kind of stuff. And there was actually a bit of a debate over whether or not Sunday shopping should be allowed, like a political debate. And of course, they decided yes. I believe that was around 88 or 89.
Oh, wow. Because I know my hometown ain't like that now. Of course, everybody goes to the bigger towns and shops at Walmart and
might have been a little bit earlier, like 86. But the thing is, this is a heavily populated area, too. And it was like that.
Oh, I really believe the Jews just chipped away those laws until they got rid of them everywhere.
Yep. I'm not even sure if the tavern, all it maybe it could serve, because it usually had hamburgers and stuff like that too, but I think it was just kind of like what you'd have in the morning, coffee and rolls and that type of thing.
Microphone muted.
Yeah, well, I really believe in Jersey and New York, they didn't want the bars to compete with the churches, so the churches would complain if the bars were open. Because they know damn well all those Irishmen are going to be in the bars.
I remember back in the day in Texas, you used to be able to not buy weird shit like lawn chairs and such, the so-called blue laws.
Yeah, that's what they call them in New Jersey, blue laws. But the blue laws were gone by the end of the 70s. And in most counties, they chipped away at them county by county.
I know back home, there was a lot of towns that were dry, they called it, in some good-sized towns of 20,000 people. There wasn't a liquor store in town. To buy a case of beer or whatever, you had to better get that done somewhere else.
Okay, this is a little later than I thought. Hudson County is the county I grew up in. Hudson County voters decided in 1985, that's later than I thought, a lot, at least 6-8 years, to become the 20th of 21 counties to repeal the state's blue laws. Bergen County voters did it in 1980, and that's the county closest to New York City, Hudson and Bergen, when the repeal was narrowly defeated, and in 1993, when the repeal was overwhelmingly rejected after a bitter campaign. A 2013 bid to put the issue back on the county ballot failed to produce the required amount of signatures. So I think Bergen County might still have blue laws. And then in 1986, the governor signed a bill that allowed Bergen County municipalities to have their own blue laws. So they split it into counties, then they split it into towns. And some towns in Bergen County, New Jersey, evidently still have blue laws, which I never knew that.
Today yet.
I don't believe they still have blue laws in New Jersey, but they do.
That's pretty impressive, actually.
I guess, because you know what? I'll bet they got fags in every county. I'll bet they got gay marriages and mixed marriages in every county.
Maybe they had a lot of guys in that county that were them that sold booze on Sunday, lowering the jugs down out of the window of their apartment. And so many of them did that, because that's what they did before you could have that in the city when I worked at housing. There was guys there that were lived in housing. That's how they made a lot of money. They'd have a whole bunch of booze, and the drunks would come and buy a quart off them or whatever they wanted. And they'd send the money up, and they'd send them down a bottle, and away you go.
Yeah. When I was a kid in Jersey, you could not buy packaged goods, they called it, right? Which was like booze to go. Cases of beer, bottle of wine. You could not buy packaged goods on a Sunday at all, ever. So if you were having like a family party or a get together on Sunday, you better buy all your beer and wine on Saturday and liquor. Better have it all on Saturday. I was never a liquor drinker after my teenage years. So I never really concerned about that. But if I was having a family party or something on Sunday, I would have to go to the liquor store on Saturday and buy all the beer I needed. Because you just weren't going to get it on a Sunday from anywhere.
We used to go dove hunting in Anson, Texas, north of Abilene a piece. And up until very, very recently, those poor kids, it's a dry county, dry town, all that stuff. But the poor kids, there was no dancing in Anson. Those poor kids had to go to Abilene for their proms and such.
Baptists, that's those Baptists. Mm.
Christian Reform are that way too.
Are they?
Yep. I live right next to them. Their name of their town was New Jerusalem, and they called us Sodom and Gomorrah.
Wow.
They didn't allow swimming. They couldn't go to the beach on Sunday. The guy that was a good friend of mine at the time, his best man in my wedding, I don't know why they went there, because they didn't live by that town, but he got thrown out because he liked to have a beer once in a while. And they had that were... when they threw him out of the church or voted him out or however they do that, he said, well, he said, I'll tell you what, he said, I like to walk in the front door like everybody else when I want a beer, not come in the back door like you guys do.
Wow.
Because that was always a joke in our hometown that if you ever boarded up the back door of our liquor store, the revenue would drop in half.
Yeah.
They park way over somewhere in town and then walk and then slip in the back door, because it's like an old town where all the buildings are joined and make it look like you're going to the hardware store, but all of a sudden you slip in the liquor store.
So you can't dance, you can't swim, you can't play music, you can't drink. But your daughter can go out with a nigger.
Well, my mom always said that there was always way more girls that got pregnant in that area than Clare City or any of them other ones. And she said, well, there's nothing else to do. She said,
yeah, right.
They can't even go to the lake and swim. They can't do this. They can't do that.
Yeah, make it worse instead of better.
There was dance halls all around. Most towns had them. My little hometown had one, and the ones south and east of us a little bit, they had one, the Palm Ballroom. Mom and Dad used to go there quite a bit. It was a lot of fun.
User
a lot of people
channel.
Would come, and the kids, we'd run around like we're half nuts, and they would dance. And
I never really had that culture when I was a kid. We didn't dance.
Well, my mom and dad could really let her go. Well, most of them could. A different era. My one aunt and uncle, they called square dancing and all that kind of stuff. They actually shut part of the town down on a night, and people come from all over. And I mean, it was huge. It filled that whole parking lot and the street and everything else.
I think you probably had a lot of German festival stuff going on up there too.
Yeah, I remember them having different things, but the
user in your channel timed out.
I know where my brother-in-law out in Wisconsin. I don't know. There must be different groups of Germans or something, because where he lives, there's a ton of them too. And that was like what you were talking with the Irish. Somebody's at county roads would meet out in the country, and there'd be a beer joint on every corner. Just
yep.
How can all these stay in business? Out where I was, it wasn't like that. I mean, it wasn't that they didn't have that, but not like that. Holy cow. They were everywhere.
There were so many bars in my county ever since like the 30s, 40s, 50s that it was impossible to get a liquor license. They wouldn't issue any new licenses to have a bar. Unless somebody else was retiring and was selling his license. And when I was a little kid in the 70s, when I was a teenager, if you wanted a liquor license, you had to find somebody that was retiring, and he would be selling it for at least $50,000 back then. That's what it cost you for liquor license. Because they were permanent licenses fixed to the establishment,
user
to the address.
Channel.
So you had to buy the establishment, and you had to buy the license. Mm. If nobody bought that license, it died. Which was why they made it that way. That's why they made it that way. So that they reduce the number of bars and liquor stores, but especially bars. Harrison, New Jersey, Kearney, New Jersey had bars on every block on the main drags and a lot of bars in between. Bayonne, Jersey City, when I was a kid, had a bar on it. Every single corner. It looked weird when there was no bar on a corner. And a lot of corners had two or three or four bars across from each other. Just the way the city was built.
Jeremiah 18.
Jeremiah chapter 18, verse 1. The word just came to Jeremiah from Yahweh, saying, "Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause thee to hear my words." Then I went down to the potter's house, and behold, they wrought a work on the wheels. And the vessels that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again, another vessel, and it seemed good to the potter to make it. Then the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, "O house of Israel, cannot I do with you as this potter, saith the Yahweh? Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are ye in mine hand, O house of Israel. At what instant I shall speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom, to pluck it up and to pull down and to destroy it. If that nation against whom I have pronounced turn from their evil, I will repent of the evil that I thought to do unto them. And at what instant I shall speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom to build and to plant. If it do evil in my sight, that it obey not my voice, then I will repent of the good wherewith I said I would benefit them. Now therefore, go to, speak to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith Yahweh, Behold, I frame evil against you and devise a device against you. Return ye now, every one from his evil way, and make your ways and your doings good. And they said, There is no hope, but we will walk after our own devices, and we will every one do the imagination of his evil heart. End of verse 12.
Well, I mean, the children of Israel were a pot, or in this case, the children of Judah for the most part. And they got smashed down into a new lump in the captivity and reformed somewhere else.
Well, he certainly has done it to us many times.
Yeah, several. And we still don't get it.
No.
Yeah, that's pretty cut and dry. I don't know if there's anything else really to speak about here, but.
Okay, verse 13. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh, ask ye now among the heathen, who hath heard such things? The virgin of Israel hath done a very horrible thing. Will a man leave the snow of Lebanon, which cometh from the rock of the field, or shall the cold flowing water that come from another place be forsaken? Because my people hath forgotten me, and they have burned incense to vanity, and they have caused them to stumble in their ways from the ancient paths, to walk in paths in a way not cast up, to make their land desolate and a perpetual hissing. Everyone that passes thereby shall be astonished and wag his head. I will scatter them as with an east wind before the enemy. I will show them the back and not the face in the day of their calamity. Then said they, Come and let us devise devices against Jeremiah. For the law shall not perish from the priest, nor counsel from the wise, nor the word from the prophet. Come, and let us smite him with the tongue, and let us not give heed to any of his words. Give heed to me, O Yahweh. Hearken to the voice of them that contend with me. Shall evil be recompensed for good? They have digged a pit for my soul. Remember that I stood before thee to speak good for them and to turn away thy wrath from them. Therefore, deliver up their children to the famine and pour out their blood by the force of the sword, and let their wives be bereaved of their children and be widows, and let their men be put to death.
User entered
let their young men be slain by the sword in battle. Let a cry be heard from their houses, when thou shalt bring a troop suddenly upon them, for they have digged a pit to take me and hid snares for my feet. Yet, Yahweh, thou knowest all. Counsel against me to slay me. Forgive not their iniquity, neither blot out their sin from thy sight, but let them be overthrown. Deal thus with them in the time of thine anger. End of chapter 18.
Yeah, you know, I spoke about this last week, I believe. Jeremiah is pronouncing all these words throughout Jerusalem, throughout probably the surrounding communities also, because after the siege of Hezekiah, the siege of Hezekiah was about 73 years, 75 years before Jeremiah started his ministry. So in that 75 years, the people of Jerusalem that were bottled up by the Assyrians, they actually did have plenty of opportunity, and this is evident in the scriptures, Kings and Chronicles, to go out of Jerusalem and resettle some of the cities that the Assyrians took everybody into captivity. So they resettle a lot of the area, and Judah starts to grow again and prosper in the time of Josiah from 640 BC. So Jeremiah must be going to all the surrounding towns and villages, as well as to Jerusalem, and announcing these words. And in this chapter here, we read where the people start to turn against them, that they don't want to hear it anymore. So they're going to end up oppressing. I'm sorry. I'm sneezing. I don't know why. They're going to end up oppressing Jeremiah and actually wanting to kill him and imprisoning him and all that. As we get through another 10 chapters, we'll see that.
Yep. Put him in the pit.
So that they're, yeah, you know, that saying, don't hate the messenger. Jeremiah probably is one of the earliest occurrences of that.
I'm just bringing the message.
Yeah, right. Oh, wow. I don't know why I started sneezing all of a sudden. I just finished the food Melissa made for me. Okay. I don't know if there's anything else we want to talk about here, but yeah, they're getting tired of Jeremiah. Let us devise devices against Jeremiah. Yeah,
we hate what he's saying. Let's get rid of him.
Yeah.
Well, they were pretty nasty to him. Okay, chapter 19.
You know, today, not too many people on the right wing can start talking in public without getting shouted down and Antifa and all the libtards and the faggots wanting to kill them, right? I mean, it's the same thing today. It's the same dynamic. The same dynamic was found in Charlottesville, that they won't even let you talk, that they'll just riot until you shut up. It might be even a lot worse now than it was in Jeremiah's day. If Jeremiah went to talk in the public square, they'd lynch him.
I really like Jeremiah 51.
Well, we got about 32 chapters to get there, but we'll get there.
I don't think we'll make it tonight.
Yeah, not tonight.
Chapter 19?
Yeah, this is the broken bottle.
Okay, thus saith Yahweh, go and get a potter's earthen vessel, and take of the ancients of the people, and of the ancients of the priests, and go forth into the valley of the son of Hinnom, which is by the entry of the east gate, and proclaim there the words that I shall tell thee, and say, hear ye the word of Yahweh, O kings of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring evil upon this place, in which whoever heareth, his ears shall tingle, because they have forsaken me, and have estranged this place, and have burned incense in it unto other gods, whom neither they nor their fathers have known, nor the kings of Judah, and have filled this place with the blood of innocents. They have built also the high places of Baal, to burn their sons with the fire of burnt offering unto Baal. Then, which I commanded not, nor spake it, it neither came into my mind. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that this place shall be no more called Tophet, nor the valley of the son of Hinnom, but the valley of slaughter. And I will make void the counsel of Judah and Jerusalem in this place, and I will cause them to fall by the sword before their enemies, and by the hands of them that seek their lives. And their carcasses will I give to be meat for the fowls of the heaven and for the beasts of the earth. And I'll make this city desolate and a hissing. Every one that passes by shall be astonished and hiss because of all the plagues thereof. And I'll cause them to eat the flesh of their sons and the flesh of their daughters. And they shall eat every one the flesh of his friend in the siege, and straitness wherewith their enemies. And they shall that seek their lives shall straighten them. Then shalt thou break the bottle in the sight of the men that go forth with thee. And it shall say unto them, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, even so will I break this people and this city as one breaketh a potter's vessel that cannot be made whole again. And they shall bury them in Tophet until there be no place to bury. Thus will I do unto this place, saith Yahweh, and to the inhabitants thereof, and even make this city as Tophet. And the house of Jerusalem and the houses of the kings of Judah shall be defiled as the place of Tophet, because of all the houses upon whose roof they have burned incense unto all the hosts of heaven, and having poured out drink offerings unto other gods. Then came Jeremiah from Tophet, whither Yahweh had sent him to prophesy. He stood in the court of Yahweh's house and said to all the people, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring upon this city, upon all her towns, and all the evil that I have pronounced against it, because they have hardened their necks, and they might not hear my words. End of chapter 19.
Okay, this is a pretty significant and symbolic place that Jeremiah went there to speak these words, because the valley of the son of Hinnom is where the children of Israel sacrificed their children to Moloch. And we see that as soon as 2 Kings chapter 23. And he defiled Topheth, which is the valley that this is the revival of Josiah, actually. And he defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the children of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter to pass through the fire to Moloch. And I guess that didn't last, because now Jeremiah is in Tophet. We read of an earlier time in 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles chapter 33, verse 6, of Manasseh, the king of Israel, that he was going to Judah to the valley of Hinnom, and he caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. Also, he observed times and used enchantments and used witchcraft and dealt with the familiar spirit. I think Manasseh was king of Israel. He was king of Judah. He was a king of Judah. Second Chronicles chapter 33. Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign, and reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. And he caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. So we see that. And it's actually from ancient times that the children of Israel were doing that. Well, Tophet means place of fire. So where we see the references to Tophet here, that is the altar in the valley of Hinnom. And where Christ threatens that people are going to burn in the fire later on in the gospel, the land, the name is Gehenna. And Gehenna comes from two Greek words, gay, G-A-I, which is land, and henna. And that in the Greek language, no Greek word ends with anything but a vowel or a D or an R or an N or an S, I'd say, a D or an R or an S. Every Greek word ends with a vowel or a D or an R or an S. So a lot of times when they transliterated words into Greek, henam is a name, they would leave off that ending because Greek words typically didn't end with an M. I don't know one Greek word ends with an M with that letter. The only exception to that is the word ek and hex, which is six, or from. X is from and hex is six and ek is from. It's related to X. That's the only exception to that. Well, they would just drop the M and spell it henna instead of henam. So Gehenna is the land of henam. And Christ is threatening his followers that if they're sinners, they're going to burn in Gehenna. That means the land of Hinnom from the Old Testament that we see here. Instead of Valley of Hinnom, it was Gehenna in the New Testament, which is land of Hinnom. That word gay, G-A-I in Greek, is the same word that you see. Gaia is the personified Mother Earth in Greek, or in New Age nature worship, right? They borrowed the Greek word Gaia, which is goddess of the earth.
And so at an earlier time, they were doing these sins, and then they sought Yahweh, and Yahweh kept them from these things. And now that they've turned their backs on Yahweh, they're being given over to sin again. Is that what you're saying, Bill?
Well, that's, yeah, you know, that's the dynamic that Paul explains in Romans chapter 1, right?
Yeah.
Forsake God and he'll give you up to all these disgusting sins.
Yeah, so their protection has lapsed because they turned their backs on God, whereas at an earlier time, Yahweh promised to protect them from these things, you said.
It's almost like they don't believe what he says, that he'll actually do it.
Yeah. They don't fear God. Maybe.
Well, it's like faggotry is actually a punishment from God for other sins. And that's what Paul explains in Romans chapter 1.
Give you over to unnatural affections.
User entered your channel.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's the same with sacrificing your babies to the fire or with having abortions and things like that. It's a punishment from God for your other sins. Your idolatry and you're forsaking him. So that's the significance of Jeremiah here. He's actually standing in a place delivering these words in the same place where they had sacrificed their children to Moloch in the fire and throughout previous generations. Whether they reverted to doing it here again, of course, we see the habits and weakness of people. Yeah, they probably did. But in, as I just read, in 2 Chronicles chapter 33, Josiah did put an end to that. That wasn't the whole long time before Jeremiah spoke these words. Josiah is actually still the king now. At this point in Jeremiah, Josiah is still the king.
I'm sorry, but is everyone kind of breaking up a little bit on the audio?
Microphone activated.
No. I think it's just you.
So earlier,
someday you're going to get like cable and a computer and be able to do this without struggling. I'm sorry, Joe.
But so earlier in Josiah's kingship, Yahweh made a promise to him to protect the people from these curses. And then later in his reign, they've forsaken Yahweh and these curses come upon them again. I don't know if I missed that, or I was going to look up the verse, but.
Yeah, you would probably have to like refresh my memory with that. I mean, Josiah led a reform, but it obviously wasn't long lasting. Otherwise, Jeremiah wouldn't be saying here that in chapter 17, which I think it was chapter 17, which you missed, that it's written in stone that they're going to go into captivity.
Yep.
It's at the beginning of chapter 17. So they couldn't have repented with Josiah's reform. And if they did repent, it was awfully short-lived. I mean, Josiah was the king where they dusted off the book of the law.
Yep.
And he cried when he read it. That shows the extent to which it was forsaken.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And he's also the king that removed,
he removed the Ashtoreth idols from the temple of Yahweh. So that's the extent to which these people have gone into sin in the time of Manasseh. From the time of Hezekiah to the time of Josiah was about, it was almost 60 years. Yeah. And in that 60 short years, that's the extent that they went into sin. That they had Ashtoreth idols in the temple of Yahweh and houses of the Sodomites next to the temple that Josiah broke down. I cited that in my last podcast.
Yeah, his son was already evil, who took over from Josiah.
Yes.
Yeah, didn't after Josiah, didn't he get killed in battle, right?
Yeah, he got killed in battle not long before 612 BC.
But I mean, it seemed like they started sliding back almost as soon as he was dead.
Right. He actually got, he may have got killed in battle right after 612 BC, about 608 BC, I'm thinking. And 609 BC. And the circumstance, the historical circumstance with that is that the Assyrian Empire was destroyed in 612 BC. The Scythians, Cimmerians, Babylonians, Persians, and Medes all destroyed all the cities of the Assyrians. And there was no more an empire until the time in the Book of Nezar in 606 to 605 BC. So for about 12 years, 7 years, for about 7 or 8 years, user there was no empire. Time down. There was no clear ruling nation that could fill that void that Assyria left until the time in the Book of Nezar, when he started conducting military campaigns to go out and conquer all of the remnants of the Assyrian Empire in 605 BC.
Entered your channel.
Okay. So that left a void of microphone rulership needed. And it left all the nations of the former Assyrian Empire to be more or less autonomous for a short time. So Pharaoh Necho decided that he was going to leave Egypt and go up to the Hittite city of Carchemish, because Egypt had ancient ties and an ancient claim on Carchemish, and he was going to conquer it for Egypt. So he passed through the land of Judah, and Josiah didn't like that he was passing through the land of Judah, so he went out to face him, and he lost his life doing it. That's how Josiah got killed. And Necho didn't succeed in Carchemish for very long. And ultimately, Egypt was on a decline anyway, and that was the last breath of life in the Egyptian Empire, basically, because it lay stagnant. After Necho, it lay stagnant until Alexander the Great conquered Egypt 300 years later, 270 years later. So Josiah was killed when Pharaoh Necho was passing through Judah on his way to conquer Carchemish, basically. Which was a battle he picked and not really one he had to have. I mean, the Egyptians would have passed through the land and come back and passed through again.
Yeah, Necho even wrote him a letter saying, why are you the king of Judah being aggressive toward me. I have nothing to do with you.
Yes.
Going somewhere else. But Josiah wanted to fight him anyhow.
You know, Herodotus records the death of Josiah, but he doesn't. He calls the people of Judah the Syrians of Palestine. And it is in Herodotus. But he doesn't call them Judah or Israel. He calls them the Syrians of Palestine. It should be in my notes somewhere in the inside flyleaf covered at Herodotus I loaned you, David.
Yeah, I think it is in there, yeah. There's a lot of interesting notes in there.
Yeah, I didn't make enough notes there. I really didn't. It was early in my studies, and I made a few notes, but hardly enough. Maybe someday I'll reread it. The more I studied, the more notes I made. I guess the more I studied, the more notes I was able to make.
Yeah.
I guess that's how it works, right? But I think I read that Herodotus in 98. I don't remember the date on the inside cover. It might have been 99. One of them.
Microphone muted.
So I look up Josiah on Wikipedia just to get that date right, because I thought it was 608, and they're saying it's 609. It could have been 608, a year off. Most of the chronologies are a year or two off. I look up Josiah on Wikipedia, and the first thing I see is a nigger baby. What the fuck? With a couple of images of what looks like ancient kings, there's a nigger baby. So Josiah doesn't die until 609, and we're not there yet in Jeremiah's ministry. I don't remember if Jeremiah mentions anything about the death of Josiah. I don't think so. He mentions them in Jeremiah chapter 22, though, and in 25. Here we go, in Jeremiah chapter 25, the 13th year of Josiah. So we're still in those first 13 years. Okay, I'm wrong, because that's when Jeremiah's ministry began, was in the 13th year of Josiah. That's 627. In Jeremiah chapter 25, it says, from the 13th year of Josiah unto this day. That is the 320th year. So there we have it. Between Jeremiah 1 and Jeremiah 25, only 10 years go by. I didn't notice that before. Only 10 years go by in the first 25 chapters of Jeremiah. So that would bring it, Jeremiah chapter 25 is 617 BC. And he's still alive in 26, 27. In chapter 27, it's Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah. In chapter 26, it's the beginning of chapter 26, is Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah. So even with that, if it's the 320th year of Josiah, Josiah got 13 more years left before Jehoiakim, because, no, I'm wrong. 10 more years. I think Josiah was 32 or 33 years. I'm going to find out now. Josiah's Passover was in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah. Because I was 8 years old and he reigned 31 years. So even with Jeremiah chapter 25, Jehoiakim becomes the king at the beginning of Jeremiah chapter 26. And that's the 23rd year of Josiah. I'm sorry, the beginning of chapter 25 is the 23rd year of Josiah. So there's another 8 years left. And then in Jeremiah chapter 26, it says, in the beginning of the reign of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah. So 8 years goes by between Jeremiah 25 and Jeremiah 26. That's what it seems on the surface. Jeremiah, take a vacation. Did he go to Ireland or something in that time? No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
I heard he was a good swimmer.
Yeah. So through chapter 25, Josiah is still the king. And in chapter 25, Jeremiah has only been prophesying 10 years. And he's still got a long ways to go. And I'm sorry, I'm human. I'll be right back. I had to go visit the boys' room.
Hey, Don.
Hey, John. How's things going?
Hot and dry. Hot and dry.
We got a little respite here. We got 3.5 tenths the other day. It's just the other day. It's amazing. Just that little bit of rain, it sure makes things look different. But we're going to go back up into the hot again, and no rain in sight. So. Cattle look pretty good, the numbers you sent me.
Yeah, they don't look too bad for the way the weather is.
That's what I thought. Boy, they look good considering everything.
Yeah, it's so dry here that I had to quit tying my dog under the tree. They're about to ring him to death.
Yeah. Your spring still flowing good water?
Yeah, yeah, it's doing good.
That's good. That's a biggie.
Ain't no big, big spring, but it's running more than what I thought it would.
We'd sit up there at the old girlfriend's place and just watch the corn burn.
Yeah, that's quite a pastime, huh?
Yeah. I'd rather watch niggers burn. I'm sorry. Blurred out their first impression.
But they always look burnt.
Yeah.
Wonder how you know when they're done.
Yeah, I like to joke about Atlanta all the time that Sherman burnt it and it's still black.
Microphone
out. Are we doing one more or should I just shut this off?
We're at chapter 20. It's a short one.
Yep. Want to do it?
As long as you want to read it.
Okay, chapter 20, verse 1. Now, Pashur, the son of Immer, the priest, was who was also chief governor of the house of the of Yahweh, heard that Jeremiah prophesied these things. Then Pashur smote Jeremiah the prophet and put him in the stocks that were in the high gate of Benjamin, which was by the throne of Yahweh. And it came to pass on the morrow that Pasher brought forth Jeremiah out of the stocks. Then said Jeremiah unto him, Yahweh hath not called thy name Pasher, but Megor-Misabib. I hope that's pretty close.
Okay, Pasher means freedom, according to this, the Strong's rendition in Bible Works. Pasher means freedom, and Megor-Misabib, that was pretty good. That means terror on every side.
Terror on every side?
I guess.
Okay. For thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will make thee a terror to thyself and to all thy friends, and they shall fall by the sword of their enemies, and thine eyes shall behold it. And I will give all Judah into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall carry them captive into Babylon, and shall slay them there with the sword.
Moreover, so that justifies the meaning of Megor-Misabib.
Yep. That's right there. He's a terror to himself.
Yeah, and everybody else.
Yeah, everybody else. Moreover, I will deliver all the strength of this city, and all the labors thereof, and all the precious things thereof, and all the treasures of the kings of Judah will I give into the hand of their enemies, excuse me, which shall spoil them and take them and carry them to Babylon. And thou, Pasher, and all that dwell in thine house shall go into captivity, and thou shalt come to Babylon, and there thou shalt die, and shalt be buried there, thou and all thy friends to whom thou hast prophesied lies. O Yahweh, thou hast deceived me, and I was deceived. Thou art stronger than I, and hast prevailed. I am in derision daily. Everyone mocketh me. Since I spake, I cried out. I cried violence and spoil, because of the word of Yahweh was made a reproach unto me, and a derision daily. Then I said, I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name, but his word was in mine heart as a burning fire, shut up in mine bones, and I was weary with forbearing, and I could not stay. For I heard the defaming of many, fear on every side, report they, we will report it. All my familiars watch for my halting, saying, peradventure he will be enticed, and he will prevail against him, and we shall take our revenge on him.
Yeah, you know, I'd really like to talk about that just a little bit. That this, ever since Jeremiah spoke to Pasher in verse 6, and then in verse 7, he's really beginning a prayer. This is his own prayer expressing his exhaustion, basically, with his own trials, that he's been preaching the word of God. Everybody mocks him. And then he said, well, he won't preach the word of God, but it burned up inside him, and he had to preach the word of God. He couldn't help himself. He could not stay, right, at the end of verse 9. And then the people that he reports the word of God are waiting for him to sin. They're hoping that he is enticed, and they know that if he sins, then they will prevail against him.
Yeah.
So it's like the people that you call them to witness, and you call them out, and they spend their time waiting for you to fall, waiting for you to sin. They want to tear you down. They don't want to consider their own sins.
Nope. They're just watching you.
Yeah, I just had to get in that in there before we got too far away from it.
Verse 11.
Isn't there a different angle, though? Because can they be, like, Jewish and trying to tempt, you know, some of them could have been mongrels, maybe, and trying to tempt, like, what Jews do today?
Yes, is that possible? And that was probably, there were some of them back then, too, that were hoping that he would, the same thing, the same dynamic. Jeremiah was warning about the race fixing in Jerusalem since Jeremiah chapter 2. So you probably, even though you didn't have Facebook, you had trolls. We've always had trolls in society. We don't need social media to have trolls. So there were probably people acting self-righteous that were really Jews and speaking against Jeremiah that were really pikes, I'm sure.
Well, look at them that followed the apostles around everywhere. Wherever they went, people would show up like that.
Yep. To argue with Christ.
Verse 11. But Yahweh is with me as a mighty, terrible one. Therefore my persecutors shall stumble, and they shall not prevail. They shall be greatly ashamed, for they shall not prosper. Their everlasting confusion shall never be forgotten. But O Yahweh of hosts, that triest the righteous and seest the reins in the heart, let me see thy vengeance on them, for unto thee have I opened my cause. Sing unto Yahweh. Praise ye Yahweh, for he hath delivered the soul of the poor from the hand of the evildoers. Cursed be the day wherein I was born. Let not the day wherein my mother bare me be blessed. Cursed be the man who brought tidings to my father, saying, a man-child is born unto thee, making him very glad. Let the man be as the cities which Yahweh overthrew, and repenteth not, and let him hear the cry in the morning, and the shouting at noontide. Because he slew me not from the womb, or that my mother might have been my grave, and her womb be the great, always great with me. Wherefore came I forth out of the womb to see labor and sorrow, that my days should be consumed with shame. End of chapter 20.
I really think this is significant, right? It doesn't say that this is a prayer of Jeremiah, but it's very clear from verse 7 that that's the context, that this is a prayer of Jeremiah. So we see like a human personal side to this prophet that we don't see in all the other prophets, for real.
Isn't that why they call Jeremiah the heart prophet or something like that, or the love prophet, or, you know, the heart? He was very sensitive, I guess, to his people.
I don't know, Joe. I never really paid attention to what they say in Judeo-Christian commentaries.
That's good.
I really don't. I mean, I don't know that anybody else would even recognize this for what it is.
Mark told me that once many years ago. Mark said it to me. He said something like that.
Yeah, you know, Mark wasn't really a Judeo-Christian or a Judeo-tard, but he was more aware of what they say in denominational churches than I am. I mean, I really don't know anything they say in denominational churches if I don't have guys in the chat telling me.
Yeah, same. I was never really involved in the churches before CI.
So then I might go look it up. With this faggot thing, I actually looked a couple of things up that Patrice had said, and I saw it all over the place. I'm like, damn. So that's why I addressed those points in the God Hates Fags podcast. I don't know what y'all thought about that podcast, but I really wanted to stick it in their eyes. Okay, I don't really need feedback. I can do without it.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It was good. Yeah.
I just hope
it was real interesting.
I just hope it gets lots of downloads. That's all. Because God hates fags. It's already 4,900, so.
You know what, Bill? You did way better than Westboro Baptist Church. I can tell you that.
Okay, good. I got to do better than them or I'm going to hang it up.
You've taken the motto, God hates fags, to the next level for sure, because they're lame compared to...
Well, I just want to do a full study, right? That's why I set out to do it.
Right.
I just wanted to go over all the primary key verses and concepts, add enough information from classical history to substantiate my points. That's all.
The biggest argument for faggotry from Christians I'm hearing now is just that Christ was peaceful and this isn't anything he would have done or taught, so you shouldn't hate them. Like, that's about the substance of their argument.
But what the hell was Luke 19:27 and Matthew 10:34? What the hell is bring my enemies hither and slay them before me? And what is I come not to bring peace but a sword? And what's Revelation chapter 2, I think it's verse 19, that I'll kill her children with death? What the fuck? He's going to kill babies and shit. That they're just kidding themselves. What's that Christ that returns in Revelation chapter 19? Or the Christ that the blood is up to the bridles of the horses?
Yep.
They're like, it's not your duty to call out anybody, and it's Christ's duty, and he's loving, so you can't be hateful.
No, that's bullshit. It is my duty. Because we're to rebuke sinners and resist the devil, and he will flee from you. And Matt, maybe I should do God Hates Pussies next.
Well, we're supposed to show them the love of God, Bill.
I'm sorry?
I said we're supposed to show them the love of Christ, aren't we? We're supposed
to... Yeah, the love of Christ. I'll kill your damn children if you break my law. How about that one? That's the love of Christ.
His love isn't shallow. It's true. It's not this shallow, oh, be nice to everyone. That's what they want. That's what these godless, faithless people want. He's like, oh, I'm just going to be nice to everyone.
Well, right. The problem with Judeotards is they confuse godly love for hippie love. That's the damn problem. And the shallow Greeks had love. Four different words for love. That they had philo, and they had agape, and they had eros, which is hippie horny love, right? That's erotic and the stem.
Let's just do whatever, you know. Just do whatever. That's the hippie.
Yeah, right. Well, the Greeks had several different words for love. And
that ain't love, though.
In English, they only have one word for love, so they confuse every perversion and every thrill, sexual thrill, for love.
It's not harming you, Bill.
But it harms the entire society. Yeah, it does harm me. Well, I have to walk down the street and see purple-haired, fat, 300-pound purple-haired lesbians. That hurts my eyes.
Right.
I have to see men dressed like bitches and acting like girls. That hurts my ears and my eyes.
I just wanted to say, like, one thing is a lot of these people in these judeo marriages, they're indifferent to each other. They're not actually, you know, devoted to each other and prepared to sacrifice for each other or anything like that. And they have the same attitude towards their own family and their own people. They're indifferent to their own family. They're indifferent to their own people.
Well, that's true, but that's because in Judeo-Christian marriages, marriage is only an economic arrangement made for economic purposes, and I will fuck you if you feed me, I'll lay down and spread my legs for you, and I'll keep spreading my legs for you as long as you pay my bills and let me go shopping at Macy's or wherever all these fancy department stores. Let me go shopping. And I'll keep sleeping with you. And marriage is a financial arrangement.
Half the time for them, even when you meet all those conditions, after a few years of marriage, when they get bored, the husband gets left out in bed, basically, and she doesn't want anything to do with the bedroom. So that's what they get married for. And then later on in the marriage, it turns into the husband getting angry because he has nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't doubt it.